Hey folks, before we start this week's episode, we gotta tell you about this special event coming up June 20th at 9 p.m. at Naked City Brewery and Tap House in beautiful Seattle, Washington. That's right, Air Raid Live number 2, featuring comedian Alicia Sanchez, Mikey and Maddie, and Pickwick, man. It's gonna be so much fun. We had a great time last year. It sold out super quick, so get on it. Go to brownpapertickets.com, type Air Raid Live into the search bar, and you should find it right there. Or you can visit www.air-raid.net, click on this episode's blog, and find the link. Buy your tickets. They're $12 in advance, $15 at the door. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 249 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. We've got a veritable payload of awesome for you this week. John Spencer of the John Spencer Blues Explosion will be joining us here on the show shortly. I had the pleasure and the honor of going down to the Crocodile here in Seattle, Washington. A wonderful, wonderful venue. And sitting down in the green room with John Spencer and watching him eat pizza and chatting with him about his life and about his music and made a slip up that we'll talk about here in just a bit. Oh my God. I hope you guys have had a great week. This is obviously to answer like 10 emails that we got today. Where's the show? Where's the show? Where's the show? Where's this week's episode? It's here. It's right here. And I have been sick with what can only be described as the plague. I could not get myself out of bed last night, could not make myself edit the show and record the intro and stuff like that. So without having like a coughing fit. So here we are, we're a day late and a dollar short. Hey, speaking of a dollar, if you'd like to support the Air Raid Podcast, you can visit our website at www.air-raid.net. Click on the donate button there at the on the top of what is that? The top left-hand corner of the page, and donate something to the show. Donate $5, $10, $15, $20, $25, anything that you can afford, just to keep this little show running. Because it does cost money to put this thing on, and it is a labor of love, and we don't see a lot of money from it. Of course, we haven't had a sponsor here for a little while, mainly because I am super lazy. Your support really helps. So just reminding you that, guys, that is there. Also, the live show coming up on June 20th at Naked City Brewery here in Seattle. It's shaping up to be a good one, folks. It's going to be a fantastic show. We are now almost halfway sold out. It's only been a week since the tickets have been on sale, and we're almost halfway sold out already. So get on it. If you want to come to the show, even if you're just thinking about maybe, you know, you'll come, it's June 20th. It's on a Saturday, 9 p.m. You're going to see some great stand-up comedy, some amazing music, and witness some fantastic conversation, not to mention a drinking game that the audience is going to be participating in, some great beer, some great food from Naked City Brewery. We'll get to hang out after the show, right? It'll be a little after party as well. So get your tickets now, $12 on brownpapertickets.com. Go there, type into the search bar, Air Raid Live, and you should come up with it. If you can't find it there, or you'd rather go to our website, air-raid.net, you can click in this episode's show blog, and it'll be right there. It'll be a little hyperlinked text right there in the show blog that you can click on. It'll take you straight there to get your tickets. So $12 in advance, $15 at the door. So come and join us, won't you? It's gonna be a hoot. Okay, so this week we have John Spencer, the one, the only John Spencer of the John Spencer Blues Explosion, also of Pussy Galore, also of Shit House. Never heard Pussy Galore, but I definitely need to dip into that. Now, let me just give you a little backstory on this. We were contacted by the John Spencer Blues Explosion. About a month ago, saying that, hey, we're coming through town. We want to do the show. John wants to do the show. And I said, hell yes, man. I've been listening to this band for since the 90s, probably mid 90s. They've been around since like 91 or something like that, I think. I've been a big fan. Now, not big enough that I knew anything about John Spencer. Okay, I'm going to put that as a caveat at the beginning of this show. And so I was super nervous to go and talk with him. He's a seasoned rock veteran in my mind and in real life. And he's very, very good at what he does. And I did not know much about him. Now, leading up to this, I had been quite sick, quite ill. And I was feeling better that day, and I took a bunch of Dayquil. Don't worry, I washed my hands so I wouldn't get him sick. And so I was super high on NyQuil or DayQuil going in to this thing, and I kind of lost it there for a little bit. I did. I'm going to say that. I'm going to put it out there right now. I kind of lost it there for a little bit. Kind of got disoriented, asked him a question that he did not particularly like, considering lo-fi. See that, folks? I'm still fighting this. I'm still battling this sickness. Asked him a question about lo-fi music pertaining to his own sound, and did not go over too well. I'm going to keep it in. I'm not going to edit it out because we smoothed things over. He apologized for jumping down my throat, which I don't really think he did all that much. But it was a bit of an awkward moment. Bit of an awkward moment to be sitting there with somebody who you have venerated, or somebody whose music you have venerated for many years, and to kind of fuck things up. But we had a good conversation nonetheless, and I think it'll be very enjoyable to listen to. If you haven't heard of John Spencer before, we're going to feature some music off their latest album called The Freedom Tower, or it's just Freedom Tower, No Wave Dance Party 2015. Came out back in March, and it's available right now. If you go to the johnspencerbluesexplosion.com, you can get yourself a copy of that. Also, they are on tour. They are continuing their tour right now. And the night that you're going to hear this, May 19th, they're playing at the Bluebird Theater in Denver, Colorado. May 20th, they'll be the Black Sheep in Colorado Springs. The Launch Pad on May 21st, Albuquerque, New Mexico. The Crescent Ballroom, May 22nd, Phoenix, Arizona. Casbah, San Diego on the 23rd. May 27th at the Abbey Bar in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And the Bowery Ballroom on May 28th in New York. So, and there's a bunch of dates after that as well. So, go to the johnspencerbluesexplosion.com and you can find out more about that. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? Let's go with our first musical break. This is Wax Dummy off of the new John Spencer Blues Explosion album, Freedom Tower. Wax Dummy. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
I got a pile of salt, a pile of sticks, reverse. Pull a power move, a karate kick. Somebody always trying to play an animal trick. I never felt so naked. Who's in control? Who's in the know? Who's gonna help carry this heavy load? Cause we're all gonna need a helping hand. Ooh.
I made a huge mistake lately. I left my glasses on the hood of my car and forgot that they were there and took off. And they were the one pair of glasses that fit my face. You know, you ever have that happen where you like search around for glasses that actually fit? Right.
These are just reading glasses, although they're kind of strong.
They become your glasses. And no, it's fine. And so took off with these things on the hood of my car, lost my glasses, had to go back to the store, you know, searching for them, and discontinued.
Oh.
No more. The frames are no more. Yeah. So you say you're a week in into the tour here. Well,
today is Thursday?
Today is Thursday, yes.
Yeah, so we've done a week, or we've done 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
This is show number 9. So
in support of the new album?
Oh, no, we've been touring longer than that.
Oh, okay.
This is about a week in on this leg of the tour. We split up the United States and Canada into 3 legs, each about 2-3 weeks long.
Yeah.
And even before that, we were playing around.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
We're gonna be busy through the end of the year.
Man, do you still enjoy it?
Yeah, I think we all still enjoy it.
Otherwise
we wouldn't continue to do it.
Well, at some point it becomes a job, right?
Well, I think it always has been a job.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I'm still kind of wrapping my head around, that, you know, well, this is a career.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And it is very hard work. You know, a friend sent me a text the other day saying, or an email and saying, well, I hope you're having tons of fun or something like that. And
yeah.
I was thinking about it. And I mean, it's very, it feels good to play a show, and it feels great to play with Judah and Russell, but it's a hell of a lot of work, you know? So it's, you know, the idea of touring is fun. I mean, yeah, it should be fun.
Right.
There should be fun moments, but it is an awful lot of work.
Yeah. Well, for a person like myself who has played music, you know, non-professionally for many, many years, the touring thing is still like this, you know, this mythic legend somewhere out there where I always just kind of, you know, think of it as like, you know, it's like a, you know, a month-long party for whoever's getting up on stage and doing the whole thing.
Well, maybe when you're younger, it can be kind of like a party. I'm not a young man anymore. It's been great to play in a band and travel around the world. I've gotten to travel around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I've come to Seattle, you know.
Yeah.
You know, for the young me in, like, 87, I think it was 87, 86 or 87 was the first time I came out here.
Uh-huh.
That was terribly exciting.
Yeah.
But it is a lot of work, you know. We have a front house engineer. We have a tour manager who also sells our merchandise. But other than that, you know, I'm packing and unpacking my own gear and loading the van and driving sometimes, for better or for worse. I'm the manager of the band, so there's always, you know, we're here in Seattle tonight, for instance. You know, I was up this morning at about 8:30 or 9, and I had to spend about two and a half hours doing business on the internet, you know, answering emails. And so we're here today, tonight in Seattle, the Crocodile, but, you know, we're somewhere else tomorrow, and we're somewhere else next week, and somewhere else next month, and we'll probably be somewhere else next year. So these things, you know, there's a lot of planning and a lot of busy work that needs to get done.
Yeah. Got to keep the machine rolling, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, for me, I don't think I ever started playing in a rock and roll band because I thought it would be a party, or I thought it would be...
Thank you.
I thought it would be... yeah, a month long party. That wasn't really on my mind. I don't think it was about, you know, getting high or meeting girls, you know, it's a sort of a cliched, you know, view of playing in a band.
For sure.
When I started playing in bands, I wasn't playing hardcore music, but that was what was informing me. And that was I was a student of that, or if you will, you know? And so that wasn't really about. About getting high, getting girls, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it was kind of different.
Well, where did it start for you?
Sorry.
No. So where did it start for you then? Where did music start for you?
I don't know. In my mother's womb. I don't know, man. I mean, it has to do with blood. And the heart.
Were your parents musical people?
My mother's a great fan of classical music and opera.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of that going on in the house.
Yeah,
when you were growing
would
up,
would hear that in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my parents are, you know, they're old, so they weren't really so much into popular music. I don't think I really got into rock and roll. I didn't get into rock and roll until quite late. I didn't really listen to rock and roll when I was a kid. And then maybe around 16 or 17 began buying records. And,
yeah.
But like I was trying to say, was playing, you know, this kind of hardcore, you know.
Yeah.
There were some hardcore bands I liked, and there were some great hardcore records, but it wasn't really something I was in love with. But it was, that was the thing that made me think, oh, I could play in a band, or I could make a record. And if you want to do that stuff, any of that, the lessons was just do it yourself, you know?
Sure.
So you might have to work a job to earn the money to pay for the recording studio and then pay the pressing plant to make the record and put out the record. If you wanted to go play a show in Athens, Georgia, you had to figure out who to call there and send something in the mail to the promoter. And, you know, it was all achievable. And, but you had to work. It was about, you know, responsibility. And so I've never kind of waited around for a handout, and never really been dependent on, you know, someone else. You know,
right, like a record label or something like that.
No,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. So it's always been kind of in your mind. This is something you do on your own.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah?
But I don't do it on my own. You know, I have.
Well, sure.
I have bandmates. I have a lawyer. I have a booking agent. Yeah, you know, I have a front of house engineer. You know, there are people that help, but there's no, you know, it's when we make a record, we pay for it ourselves, you know, and we do whatever we want to do. We make the kind of records we want to make. We play the kind of shows we want to play.
Yeah, which is amazing, by the way, because not a lot of people can say that they can do that. You know, and for as long as you've been doing it.
But believe me, I don't take it for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So take me back a little bit. Like you grew up where? On the East Coast?
I grew up in a town called Hanover, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
My father taught at Dartmouth College. So the town had the college.
Yeah.
And also had a big hospital. My mother worked at the hospital. And
she a doctor?
No. She was a echocardiologist.
Wow.
And I think if she had grown up later, you know, 20 years later or something, she probably would have been a doctor.
Uh-huh.
But hers was a generation where, you know, a woman was not really encouraged to pursue a career.
Right.
Yeah. So both my parents are scientists in a sense. Yeah. So I grew up in this small New England town.
Yeah. 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 So but what was it like growing up with a couple of scientists?
Was fine.
Were you was it like a deal where you were like, you know, school was, education was the most important thing?
I think I don't think it was really hammered too hard.
Mm-hmm.
But that may have been because I was always, you know, I just did everything. You know, I never had to be told. You know, I got good grades. I was a very good student.
Yeah.
I was a real straight arrow. You know, I didn't cause a fuss, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to be reminded or told to do anything, at least not that I can remember.
Sure.
So there wasn't a lot of browbeating about grades. And, you know, college was an important thing, you know. I think it was very important to my parents, their college education, and my father, he was a college professor. So, you know, it was kind of a given, you know, learning and higher learning. Mm-hmm. Where these were important things.
Did you end up going to college?
I did, but only a couple of years, and then I dropped out to play to play music.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So you had found music where, like playing music, you had found that in like high school, junior high,
I didn't start really playing in bands until after I left high school.
Okay,
after I graduated and I was in college.
Yeah.
So I went to Brown University for a couple of years. That's in Providence, Rhode Island.
Uh-huh.
And while I was there, I played in straight up 60s punk bands.
Yeah.
Like garage punk, you know. I played bass. And at the same time, I also played in straight up industrial noise bands.
Shit House?
Yeah. Yeah. And I banged on pieces of metal. I was kind of a drummer, a percussionist.
Uh huh.
So I had those two things going at the same time. And
so you were experimenting with all sorts of different instruments?
Kind of, yeah. I guess so. I mean, and I certainly have never, you know, let a lack of skill or knowledge hold me back. You know, it just always have picked anything up and given it a whirl.
Yeah.
So was doing that, and then after a couple of years, it wasn't really, I was pretty unhappy with the college. You know, I was playing music, making music felt good,
mm-hmm.
and that's all it seemed like I wanted to do. I mean, that much was clear to me. That's what I wanted to be doing. And so me and a friend, a woman named Julie Kafritz, we didn't go back to Brown, and instead we started a band called Pussy Galore.
Yeah, yeah. And how'd that go?
Went pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, we were together for about 5 years, the band was, Pussy Galore. We made some great records, and we played a lot. You know, we toured a fair deal,
uh-huh.
fair amount. We definitely came out to Seattle.
What was that first tour like for you?
I don't know if it was the first tour out here to the West Coast.
No, just like in general. Like,
I think it was pretty eye opening, you know, pretty mind blowing to travel from town to town, meet like minded freaks, and and meet people in other bands. You know, it's one thing to say, well, I have a copy of this Big Black record, or you know, I've read an interview with Steve Albini, or I've read an album review that he's written, but then to actually meet him in person and you know, get to know him. It was a fantastic time. You know, the underground, the American indie scene was very healthy. A lot of really cool bands and a lot of great venues, not just in big cities like Chicago or Seattle, but also in smaller towns. It was a very healthy time, and it was great to get out there and to meet people, like-minded people. And this is, you know, there's no internet. There's no compact discs. There's nothing. This is a long time ago.
What year are we talking about? Is this like
86?
86? You know? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you got to meet Steve Albini.
Yeah, I worked with Steve. You know, Steve, Pussy Galore recorded with Steve a couple times. It wasn't like, you know, any big deal.
Sure.
I think for some people it was like, you know, but Steve's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, got to meet a lot of great people.
Are you the kind of guy that doesn't get real nervous when you come into situations like that? Like,
I mean, some people I do. I mean, you know, I moved to New York City because I was so in love with, you know, the bands and film and art and culture and the Lower East Side. And it seemed very, you know, like very romantic and quite dangerous. And, you know, I think quite soon after moving there, I happened, I had the opportunity to meet Kim Gordon, Thurston Moore,
oh, yeah,
and Lydia Lunch, and these people were real heroes of mine.
Yeah,
and that I was not able to deal with, you know. So I don't know. It depends. I think for me, it's hard. There's some people where I'd rather have a relationship to the art, like say to the record or
sure,
the band,
sure,
you know. And I do
but
find
the
it,
art, but
I do
art,
find it difficult to,
yeah,
to pal around with certain people.
Sure. I mean, the art elevates the person too. In some people,
in my
minds,
mind, certainly, yes.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. Like I was fairly nervous about coming to meet you.
Me?
Yeah. Oh. Go ahead, grab your pizza. No, thanks. Honor and a pleasure.
Thanks.
Does that make you uncomfortable? Is it people saying that kind of stuff?
Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's also kind of nice. More and more, especially on this tour after this record, I notice talking to people after concerts, after shows, you know, Blues Explosion shows, that a lot of times I'll meet people who say, I've been listening to you for 20 years, or
right,
I saw you play in 94.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's sweet. Yeah, it's kind of, it's nice.
That's an amazing thing, man.
Sure.
That's an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah, I don't take it for granted.
Yeah. So, so like,
but it's only, you know, I'm only, it's, it doesn't, it's nice, but it's, you know, unless the show that just happened was a good one.
Yeah,
doesn't count for anything, you know.
Right? Do you get down on yourself sometimes when like if you feel like you didn't have a good show?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
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 Well, yeah. You'd think after all this time, like you'd be able to be like, you know what? That wasn't that great. Let's move on.
It's a little better, but
yeah.
I'm still a bit of a I'm still very
perfectionist.
Yeah, perfectionist, and still very capable of beating myself up over you know, perceived failure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's important to me to do good work, and it's terribly important to me that when the Blues Explosion is playing, we're doing our job, and we're doing a good job of it.
Yeah.
And we do put on a good show. We try very hard to do that.
Well, I think you do.
Thanks. Well, let's see how tonight goes.
Now, have you been playing with the same guys for a long time here? I don't know much about, like, you know, I've been listening to you guys for a long time.
Yeah, it's always
but
been
I know the, nothing about you.
It's always been the three of us.
Yeah.
It's Judah Bauer and Russell Simmons and myself.
Okay.
It's a trio. It's always been just the three of us, and I don't think it would work any other way. The idea of adding somebody or making a substitution, I
just
don't think
work.
That would be possible. No.
Yeah.
I think a lot of a big part of the Blues Explosion is really about or revolving around the connection between the three of us and the band.
Yeah.
The kind of musical ESP or whatever it is, the psychic link. We don't use a set list. So when we're on stage, when we're playing a gig, we kind of like to keep things open for to see, you know, what could happen. We, you know, I like to give the chance if somebody shouts something to the audience for a particular song, maybe
really?
We can hit that one.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes we fall flat on our face, but it makes it more, I think it keeps us more alive, and it can make for a more exciting
show. Well, that's
show.
What makes a great live show.
Well, yeah.
Right?
And we've always written together.
We
write by just playing our instruments. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, it's the partnership or the group, it's very important.
Well, good. That's amazing, man. Like, and that's another thing that you don't hear of a lot still happening is
yeah,
that the,
I mean,
the band sticking together.
It's nice.
So
I mean, and it's not easy, you know. We're not very good businessmen in some ways, and we're not really... doing
how
we
so
don't
always what do you mean
well I'm, you know we're not rich you know there are people I know that have you know made quite a bit of money, but then you hear these stories about how they stabbed friends in the back or
sure
did something but seems I don't know dishonest or repugnant, and you know I like to be able to go to sleep at night and again, I like to be able to do whatever the fuck, if you can say fuck on the
you can
podcast, whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, you know, we own all our own masters. We are in control of everything we do, and we're setting our own course. We've always done that. So, you know, our popularity's, I guess, going up and down, you know,
uh-huh.
But I think we're very lucky we can continue to do this, and people seem to be interested.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the latest record is amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's so good. So when you guys formed the Blues Explosion, you kind of seem like a guy that's very reserved. Just from talking to you for a little bit here, like you're very reserved. You're possibly a little bit self-conscious. Mm. How did coming to like naming the band after yourself. Did
was,
you have to wrestle with that at all?
No, not really. I was,
no?
You know, there are moments of clarity, moments of inspiration, mm-hmm. Moments of boldness, if you will. At the time, I was really into Jerry Lee Lewis. And
yeah.
was obsessed with the Sun catalog, the Sun artists, and in particular, Jerry Lee Lewis. And to me, it seemed like it seems something that the Killer would do to name the band the John Spencer Blues Explosion.
Yeah.
It made sense to me. I mean, when I said, like, well, we're not the best businessmen, I mean, you could look at that. I mean, the name is very confusing and is kind of, you know, hung around our necks like an albatross.
Yeah.
The people still get bent out of shape because we have the word blues in there.
Because they think you're some sort of, like, a blues band?
Well, yeah, they could think that, or they think we're making fun of something, you know.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah. So, I mean, when we started, I went through a phase with Pussy Galore. Was a very negative band in a lot of ways. It was a lot about.
You said it was like a kind of raw punk.
Well, it's
right?
Definitely very raw, very
yeah.
punk.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever listened to Pussy Galore, but it's very extreme, very hard music.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of it was about frustration not just with, you know, being young and not knowing what to do or not knowing how to go get by in the world or make your way through the, you know, modern society.
Yeah.
You know, anger and frustration with being young and confused. There's also just anger at kind of you know, the world at large and people, and then also anger and frustration with rock and roll. And a lot of the Pussy Galore was sort of about this sort of this, you know, comment upon rock and roll as a dead language, sort of, or something that totally dried out and used up. And not to say that Pussy Galore was just this kind of cerebral, you know, jerk off stuff. It was, we were a good band, and we made good records. And but at the, so we did it for 5 years. We kind of worked through that stuff. I definitely worked through it. And so at the end of it, when Pussy Galore finished, you know, I think that I was able to come to terms with rock and roll and sort of find some peace with it, and was able to cherish or hold tight the good parts. And I think that was the kind of the shift, or a big shift that happened between Pussy Galore and the Blues Explosion. So with the Blues Explosion, right from the get-go, yeah, it was sort of a grander gesture in some ways, certainly a more showbiz outfit.
Yeah,
I think we've always been, you know, very concerned about putting on a show. I mean, sometimes, yeah, we're definitely fucking with people, you know, but it's not simply that.
How so? Fucking with people, like, well, just, I mean, being kind of tongue in cheek.
You could even look at the name of the band.
Sure,
you know, the things that we do on stage, the way sometimes the way in which we'll construct, you know, songs, or the way in which we'll play a set. But it's not, it's, you know, it's always kind of playful. It's not malicious, you know?
Yeah.
It's one thing if you're, you know, just making a racket that sort of annoys somebody. I don't think that's what we're doing. We're certainly,
well, I've always taken
a racket. I don't think Pussy Galore was just making a racket.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I'm trying to make the point that it's, you know, definitely the band, the Blues Explosion, is playful in a sense. And so this kind of playfulness, or, you know, this, I don't want to say humor, because, or this lightness, you know, I think that's another confusing thing for people. It's sometimes people want to dismiss what we do as a joke, as a piss take, or it's just some ironic statement. And we're dearly, dearly in love with, you know, this rock and roll and soul and rhythm and blues and punk rock and all sorts of different kinds of music. And I think, you know, that's, we wouldn't be in this band if we weren't so in love with, you know, all these different artists. You know, I always like to say I'm not doing the Blues Explosion because I want to make fun of Little Richard. I'm doing the Blues Explosion because I love Little Richard.
Right.
And we're trying to keep, like I said, I'm holding the good parts close.
Sure.
And trying to keep them alive, and trying to do my godfathers or my forefathers proud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, was it a conscious decision to make it lo-fi?
I don't think we're lo-fi.
You don't think so?
No. To me, lo-fi implies that,
distorted guitars and kind of like analog equipment and
that's
and
not
things
lo-fi.
Like that.
Lo-fi to me connotes a sense of laziness. You know, like, oh, well, the record sounds this way because
that's not
a Coca-Cola.
What I meant.
Well, I'm telling you
okay.
what I think. Okay.
Yeah.
Lo-fi to me implies that it would just sort of happen by accident. That it was not, there wasn't a lot of care or effort or thought put into the way in which something sounds.
Okay.
That it was, well, all we could afford to do was this little Tascam, you know, cassette deck, and a, you know, somebody spilled Coca-Cola on it, and then it fell off the table, and we that. But what the fuck? That's, this is the take we're going to use, you know?
Sure, sure.
It's, when I make a record, it's very important to me the way it sounds. It may sound distorted and raw, but it's done with a purpose and for a reason. And, you know, so there's a lot of thought and a lot of great care going into making records. Why does the Blues Explosion record sound the way they do? Well, this is the kind of records we want to make.
Yeah.
This is what turns us on. This is what we believe in. So it's, you know, not to jump down your throat, but I sort of take issue with, you know, the kind of lo-fi idea.
Has that come out before?
Has what come out before?
Like that people consider you lo-fi?
Man, what year is it? It's 2015. Fuck, of course. Jesus. We're talking about something that was, you know, give me a break.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to strike a chord there with you.
No, I mean, yes, it's come out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course.
But
you're talking about something that is like old.
Okay.
Old news.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, I apologize.
That's all right.
You know, where do you guys go from here? What are you working on new stuff now? Is it a constant thing for you?
No, it's not really that constant.
No?
I think the focus right now is just to play the best show that we can do every night. Like I said, we're touring through the end of the year. Right now I'm trying to bring back a few old songs. Up until now, they've really been so very, very, very focused on the songs from the new album. And I feel very comfortable with them. And I think we're in a good spot with them as far as playing these songs live and playing mm-hmm. them in all manner of combinations and varieties and stuff.
Yeah.
And now I want to start to, you know, bring back some, dust off some old songs we haven't played for a while.
Yeah. And now, by the way, that is like super impressive to me that you guys can just go without a set list and, you know, somebody yell out a song and you guys can remember it and play it like
that. We can't do everything. But
well, sure, there are some, sure.
Yeah.
But you guys have such a huge catalog of material, and being able to draw on that is pretty amazing at the drop of a hat.
Sometimes we can pull it off.
So, with that said, you guys, you've been fairly prolific in the amount of material that you've come out with, and I'm a little surprised to hear that you're not working on new stuff right now. Like,
well, I mean, we just put out a record.
We
just put out a record.
Yeah,
yeah. I maybe we're getting back to this thing of not being the best businessman. I suppose, yeah. If we are better, more concerned with a trajectory of a career, we'd be thinking about like, okay, it's May. The record store Black Friday is coming up in November, so we need to get parts in by July. We need to start working on something for that. Some days it's just enough to keep the head above water.
Sure.
But,
I understand that. Yeah.
So, and also, I'm not as young anymore. It takes a lot to do the show every night.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like to speak a little bit to that? Getting older and still being in this business, does it seem like, you know, it's something that you can keep doing?
I don't know.
For many, many years?
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I was 25 when the Blues Explosion started.
Mm-hmm.
And my hunch is I probably would have thought it would be pretty crazy to think, or if I'd been told that I'd still be doing this, playing the Blues Explosion when I was 50. I don't think I could wrap my head around that when I was a youngster.
Yeah.
I think I said, it's still deeply satisfying.
Yeah.
It feels good. And that's really why we do it. We're not getting rich. You know, we really do enjoy making music together, writing songs, and playing shows.
Yeah.
And that's why we continue.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me for a little bit.
It's my pleasure.
John. Yeah. I really appreciate it. And like I said, I've been a fan for a long time.
Oh, thanks.
And, yeah.
Is that enough?
That's it, man.
All right, feel free to chop it down. And sorry if I jumped down your throat about the lo-fi thing.
Not at all.
That's like
not
something somebody would talk to us about in like 94 or 95.
Yeah, I did an interview with Phil Eck once.
Who's that?
Producer Phil Eck. He produced all the early Built to Spill records and a lot of like early Mudhoney and things like that. And the only research I did was looked up this Wikipedia page because I thought, you know, okay, well, I've heard this guy's material forever, and I can just wing this. And so I go into the radio studio. We did it at the radio studio, and had this printout of Wikipedia stuff, you know, this whole list of like things that he's worked on, and just went down this list and started talking to him about some of the stuff that was on his Wikipedia page. And he was like, "Oh, I didn't work on that." nope, that's wrong. There's all this stuff that just totally fabricated out of thin air. That's Wikipedia page. I know, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, then there's also the other side. Sometimes I'll do interviews with somebody, and it's as if they are reading, they're looking at a website and reading from somebody else's piece or just reading from the Wikipedia.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's some people which have, I think, if you're good, you can go in and, like you say, just chat. You know?
Right, right.
It's not like, you know, you should be able to pull it off, especially in this kind of medium, which is basically like talk radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to do that sometimes, right? But when you're coming into it nervous, that's tough.
Well, I'm sorry if I put you out.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's all on me, man. That's all on me.
So what instrument do you play?
I play guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah, mainly. I tried playing drums for a little while. Mm. It just wasn't working out, though.
And are you from here?
I am from, from Western Washington, yeah. Small town across the water from Seattle.
Okay.
Yeah. And, when I was in junior high, the 90s era of music, the alternative / grunge scene was, you know, starting here in Seattle. And it was every kid in my middle school was playing guitar.
How old are you?
I'm 35.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird to come. Seattle's always been a nice place. It's a nice city.
Sure.
And early on had, you know, there was cool stuff happening here. But it's also like, you know, yeah, this is the place where Nirvana came from or sort of came from.
Yeah.
And you know, that's all the stuff that killed, you know, killed the scene, as it were. You know, the success of that one band, you know, changed everything.
Yeah, it overshadowed everything, right?
No, not so much overshadowed.
Oh, okay.
Then the money came in, and the underground fell apart.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay, yeah, okay.
That's the thing. Yeah. But, you know, I this is not to put down that band or Sub Pop. You know, so I think Bruce and Jonathan were great guys, and that was such a cool label. Still is a good label. It's one of the first times that we came out here with Pussy Galore, Sub Pop, I think it was one of the first times, is we flew out and then did a trip down the coast, and they teamed us up because we were flying out. We didn't have amps, you know, so they said, we'll put you together with a band, you know, one of our bands, and it was Tad. And Tad had just started working with Sub Pop, and I think they'd just kind of gotten together and going.
Right.
And we didn't know who they were. I don't think they put out a record yet on Sub Pop. And but we did a bunch of dates with them. You know, I don't know if we traveled with them all in the same van, but we're definitely sharing their equipment, or they were being nice and letting us use their stuff. And
yeah.
So Sub Pop was always, they've always been a nice label.
Yeah.
Nice people.
Do you ever feel burnt by that? Like by the, you know, the success of a band like Nirvana, like,
no,
just kind of taking the money from the underground a little bit.
I don't think Nirvana took the money from the underground. I don't think
the
Nirvana,
industry did.
I don't think Nirvana did anything wrong.
Well, sure.
It's the, as you said, it's the industry, and the music industry has always been corrupt. Has never been a good thing. Has never treated an artist in a fair way.
Yeah,
you know. So,
are you happier with how things work now? Industry wise,
I'm not that wild about it, you know, because nobody makes any money from selling records.
Right,
now
right.
There's everybody wants to tour so they can make
it's
a living.
It's all about the shows.
And
yeah,
and for life. That's always been, you know, a focus.
Okay.
And now everybody else is like saying, I got to do this. So it's very there's so much competition now for dates, and you have to book much earlier, like 6 months in advance. You got to book
a tour. I've never even thought about it.
Yeah, because people can't rely on a record advance or can't rely on record royalties. So it's like, okay, I got to get out there and tour.
Yeah,
and that's something that I've always done. I've never relied on television or radio or mainstream press. It's always just like, okay, we're going to get out there and we're going to play, and that's how we made fans. We went out, we worked, and we played concerts.
That's really interesting. I've never thought about it that way. Like, I mean, the competition has changed.
Yeah. And it's also kind of silly when people talk about, like, oh, it's a great time now because and it's so easy to get your music heard, and anybody can make a record now.
Yeah.
Well, it's always been true.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can always make a record. You might, like I said, you might have to work at some shitty job to save up money so that you can pay the recording studio bill and then pay the pressing plant bill and play the printing company to print the jackets.
Yeah.
You know, you could always do it yourself.
Right.
This notion of like, well, it's this new thing where you can just get your music out there all by yourself. That was always an option.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
Most people are just, their minds were closed or they were too lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm talking about punk rock, you know, and punk rock meaning like DIY.
Yeah. 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 Of course. Yeah. Of course. All right. Well, John, I'll let you get back to your
all
pizza, man.
All right. Sure. You don't want a slice?
I can't. I can't do it. Can't do it. I keep coming. Well, I think that went okay, right? I think it went all right. That sounded fine. I was a little bit nervous. A little bit nervous in that chat with John Spencer of the John Spencer Blues Explosion. Once again, they are currently on tour, coming to a town near you. So go and check it out, the John Spencer Blues Explosion.com. Get your hands on this new record. It's fantastic. And, you know, I had a chance to see the show. Just blown away, man, by that band. I had never seen them live before. Finally got the chance to do it, and it was just it was absolutely fantastic. So, great job. And it was you know, like I said during the chat, it was a pleasure and an honor to meet the guy. Somebody who I've been listening to for such a long time. Okay. There you have it, folks. June 20th, live show coming up with Pickwick, Alicia Sanchez, and Mikey and Maddie. Get your tickets now, brownpapertickets.com. Go do that, will you? All right. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Just takes a couple seconds, and if all of you listening to this went to iTunes and rated the show right now, We would go up in the standings, man, and that's a big thing for us. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps, or just visit our website, air-raid.net, to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Our Twitter handle is @airraidnet, or email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, people. Pledge to tell someone about the show. Bring it up in conversation. Subscribe your friends when they don't when they turn their backs. Subscribe them to the show. They'll thank you for it. Right? I think they would. I think they would. All right. Here is your inspirational quote of the week as said by a 4-year-old.
If you're not making mistakes, then you're not doing anything.
Apt quote of the week, right? Apt quote of the week. We all make mistakes, but if you're not making mistakes, then what the hell are you doing with yourself, man? You're not learning, right? And I've learned something very valuable. Never ask the question, do you consider yourself lo-fi? Easy enough. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to go out today with the song Bellevue Baby off of the new album Freedom Tower No Wave Dance Party 2015 by the John Spencer Blues Explosion. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode of the Air Raid Podcast for you. Thanks for listening. Have a good one, everybody.
Ride about.
game and try it, and I did it.